podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Moves, bad decisions and crushing disappointment. But enough about my single life in my 20s. We're here to talk about FPL, which, funnily enough, yielded the same outcome for many managers this week. Unless they got pulled into making the Mahrez move, which obviously went very well for some people, and also managed to keep Luke Shaw on the pitch. Like, sadly, we did not. In a week pockmarked by refereeing clangers, we're back for yet another double game week midpoint pod to survey the damage and maybe take a detour into the world of hindsighting and regret. The kind of thing we saw many people indulge in reaction to game week 23's outcomes thus far. Sadly, no Lucy this week. She's been red flagged due to food poisoning. She's all right resting up. Instead, I've got a lovely first sub off the bench in the same way I was hoping Luke Shaw would come on for Andrew Robertson tonight. But sadly, Robertson is still playing in the shape of friend of the pod, Sam, FPL Pricey, who was last seen on the pod on pod 18, I think it was, this season. Welcome back, Sam. Thanks so much for stepping in at short notice. Great to see you.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to be on the show, and it feels like it's becoming a bit of a running joke. Whenever Lucy's sick, I'm the go-to Saint sub to come in off the bench. So yeah, really looking forward to it, and thanks again for having me on.
No worries. Hopefully between us, we can make half as much sense as Lucy does normally. Yeah, I don't have that much hope. Anyway, we are Who Got the Assist. You can find me, Tom, on the main account at WGTA_FPL. You can find Lucy at Lucy Hynett with two T's. On the pod today, as I sort of referenced in the opener, I think we'll take a dip into the murky waters of recasting the past, covering how hindsight, regret, and that much parroted phrase outcome bias can impact managers both in the moment and also in decision making in FPL. And I think after that, Sam, it's just a bit of meandering around, really, you know, checking out a bit of future planning, maybe what's the crack with all these doubles coming up. And we're recording on the evening of the 13th of February. So happy Valentine's Day, everyone, by the time you're listening to this. And the Liverpool-Everton game is in the second half at the moment. And I'm fully expecting Robertson's clean sheet to go at any moment because he is still playing now. Right, let's get into it then. It's obviously quite a tough week for a lot of people. Game week 23, 10 out of 11 fixtures down. How are we getting on? I mean, Sam, last time we checked in, you were pushing forward, weren't you? I think you were kind of bobbing around 200k mark. How's it been since then? Good World Cup wild card. So where do you stand now?
I'm still bobbing. So I'm still in and around between the 100 to 200k mark. Last week, I TC'd Rashford, so I did jump up to about 125k. Sweet. Felt like I was on a good forward step there, but it looks like all of that benefit might be washed away from this game week. Despite feeling pretty well set up for it, a lot of the players that I missed out on, i.e. Mahrez and benched Luke Shaw, both have done very well, and I have missed them both. So I'm on 38 points with five left to play. Haaland captain, so I don't think that really makes much difference either way. I'm just hoping that Saka can outscore the likes of Odegaard and Martinelli in the second half of the game week for Arsenal and Man City.
Okay. Did you take a hit as well?
No hits. I was very tempted, but I've just left it as is. I just did the straight Martinelli to Saka transfer, which seemed quite popular this week, mainly to try and set up in case I can't get to Salah in game week 25 to set up for that captaincy. How about you?
I've done all right. I didn't take the hit, as I mentioned last week. I was kind of really agonizing over, do I want a second Man City player in, a second Man City player? No. And I didn't do it. So I'm on 43, no hit, which is kind of all right. But really, Sam, what I'm doing at the moment is just kind of burning in a sense of injustice looking at the throwaway VAR this week. It's very niche because it affects two players. Well, I thought maybe the Arsenal one isn't as niche, but I had a goal for Estupinian, who's like 2% owned, ruled out due to a wrong offside line.
Yeah.
you know, at the time I was kind of like, oh, you know, that would have been great. But hey, you know, I'm going to get on with my day. But subsequent revelations have made me so annoyed. I mean, obviously within the confines of fantasy football, like it's not ruined my life or anything. but I mean, the way I look at it, I'm basically 10 points down with that goal being ruled out and the Ramsdale clean sheet going too. Albeit Mbeumo's goal should probably have stood, so probably the draw for us was the right result. But yeah, it's been really annoying. I've got a hefty red this week as expected. I think I'm down from 16K to 25K, but I haven't. We'll see what happens with Robertson now. I think that should repair some of the damage, but, you know, but it's obviously one of those things because I stuck to the plan, didn't buy an additional City player, kept Bruno. It just didn't, I didn't really have those sources of points, and I really needed that Estupiñán goal. But hey, so many things have gone my way this season that it feels a bit sort of rich to be complaining too much. But little things in the week, Sam, little things. You know, I kept Bruno thinking, oh, you know, he expressed such great underlying stats in the last game against Leeds. Should do well here. What does he do? Miss a 1-on-1.
Yeah.
A last minute assist for Rashford, like just offside. That's kind of how it was going to be, really. The saving grace, really, was that I didn't take a hit. And the hits that I was most considering were Akanji or Lewis in for Patterson. So that would be, you know, a net -3 or a -4 with Patterson. With Lewis, I'd be sat there thinking, oh, maybe Shaw might come on, but very, very unlikely. And KDB to Bruno, as I said last week, I just wasn't really considering it. And I will talk about Mahrez later, but that was just not anywhere near what I was thinking of doing. But yeah, if I did get those points from Ramsdale and Estupiñán, I'd be laughing. And Dermot Gallagher is saying it's a human error and you can only apologise. Yuck.
And yeah, 25K. Doesn't repair IFPL teams, unfortunately. And yeah, I think you've got every right to feel quite annoyed and aggrieved by not only that decision, but also as an Arsenal fan, what went on in the Arsenal-Brentford game as well. It was a bad week for VAR. And I think hopefully it can only get better from here.
I'm not a VAR hater at all, but I you know, something like that is quite an egregious error, and for it to happen in quite a few instances this week, and I think Lamina being sent off was another dodgy one. So yeah. It was upon those weeks where I think it was a bad week for the officials. And finally, we should just mention Lucy got 41 -4 this week. She's ruining taking the hit, so she did Saka for Bruno, Odegaard in for Martinelli. She already had the Free City in situ, Ake, Kevin De Bruyne and Haaland, similar to us, Ben Shaw, and just had precious little everywhere else, basically. That Ake sub on was obviously, she was a bit annoyed about that when that happened. It was 85th minute or something like that. But she did say afterwards, you know what, it's probably better that that's happened now rather than me kind of sat staring at it for a few days, hoping he doesn't show up.
Yeah, you don't want that false hope because he is going to play one at some point in the double game week. So it seemed better to get an extra point out of it at least.
Yeah, exactly. But unfortunately, she's back out of the top 100K after getting into it last week. I mean, she got 115 last week because she got Rashford triple captain like you. And she had Nonto for an 11-pointer. So, yeah.
Wow. Undone
the progress that she made, basically. So I think maybe that's why she skipped the pod, because she wasn't too happy about it.
No such thing as the dodgy curry then.
Who knows? There's definitely suspicions about that in the green room. Right. Okay. Elsewhere, the Min League still in flux. I think I'm going to leave that until next week. Market forces are dominated by who did a goal this week very quickly. João Felix, Ivan Toney and Riyad Mahrez are on top. Likes of Martinelli, Cancelo, Almiron, usual suspects being sold, despite Almiron actually scoring because people prepping for the blank to come. But nothing to write home about as everyone is seemingly rolling the thing anyway this week. So, as I said, with everyone probably rolling it this week, barring a game-changing impact on Wednesday, like an injury or something, that'll probably date the pod again. I think we can probably depart from the recent tactical focus. And I think this week, head off into my favoured WGTA-style white space of holistic thinking. I suppose there's also quite a few who might want to have their minds taken off the football. So we can help with that too. And I guess with this pod, we're going to meditate a bit on the psychology. An impact that a game we can have on us managers following a week where it's clear most people aren't happy with what happened. So the main topic this week is kind of hindsight in FPL or how we manage regret in FPL, something like that. Just to start off, Sam, how would you experience this normally as an FPL manager? Hindsight, regret, the sort of thread of things that I guess we cast a negative light, wouldn't we?
Yeah, so I think it's transformed for me over several seasons. Obviously, we've all been playing FPL quite a while now, but when I first started playing it, I'd get quite torn up by anything that went against me in the game, and I'd get legitimately quite annoyed at myself for getting a decision wrong or being on the wrong end of a decision. I think over time, because we've been playing it for a lot longer, I'm able to keep my emotions in check slightly now, but the regret still seeps in. We all plan so heavily for any given game week as engaged managers. There are so many different options we could have gone with that it's hard not to look back at those options if one of them has performed slightly better than the one you ended up with, and not look back and say, boy, I wish I did that instead. How much better would life be if I went that way, i.e. Mahrez over KDB this week, for instance. So yeah, it does still affect me, but I think because we've been playing it for quite a while now, it's starting to affect me less and less, and I'm able to take a step back where possible.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably come on to that in a bit more detail in a minute, but it's really the same for me. I mean, in the moment, I definitely feel it. And I think because I subsequently learned about the VAR, because it was the 3 p.m. game, so yeah, I learned that afterwards, so it's annoyed me a little bit. But it's normally very in the moment for me. And over time, I've learned to recognize it's mostly something to ignore. But it's definitely really interesting sort of impacts that it had on humans. If you listen to the Psych Pod over the summer, a lot of this will be familiar territory, so I'm not going to tread over it too much. But hindsight bias, the I knew it all along effect, kicks in when less predictable events happen and humans believe it was actually easily predictable. Very strange. I'm not going to delve too deeply into it. I know it's not everyone's bag, but the impact on the human brain especially is something called memory distortion. It's fascinating to think about. So if you're indulging in hindsight bias, saying something like, oh, you should have done X, you're basically misremembering a past which didn't exist, a past judgment or a past opinion. And that's like something was inevitable and you knew about it when you didn't. That's incredible. Mm. It's just such an amazing way the human brain is myopic and just completely warps what you know and what you felt. We see this all the time on FPL Twitter, this and its close cousin outcome bias. We'll speak about that in a bit. And it's the scourge, I think, of post-game reactions and guys' decision-making. In a lot of cases, people often launch into the next move based on hindsight rather than foresight, which can be really problematic, as we always see. Just a quick one on regret as well. I mean, if you listen to the Psychology Pod in the summer, you'll remember this, but there's a man in the Netherlands at the University of Tilburg, basically called Marcel Zeelenberg, who's a world expert on regret. And I've read a few of his papers in a professional capacity in the past. One thing to really remark on is, for our purposes anyway, is how it's a really uniquely human emotion. You're basically reacting to an imagined future, a beautiful realm where you did what you perceived the ideal outcome was rather than what it is. And that, meshing with hindsight bias, creates quite a toxic mental cocktail if things don't go your way. And we saw it this week, didn't we, with likes of Shaw and Mahrez, which you touched upon earlier on. I mean, it was definitely something that you felt during the course of this game week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that in double game week season, you feel it more sharply than ever as well, because the decision making and the variance behind that decision making is amplified to, well, double in most incidents. So I think at a time like this, it's a great time to talk about this subject. And it's something we all certainly feel week to week. And it's important to try and keep those emotions in check where possible, to try and just make logical decisions moving forward based on the information we now have, rather than looking back and thinking, oh, I should have gone down this path. Maybe I had information that I wasn't using in the correct way.
Oh, definitely. I mean, this week, I think there were two, as we both sort of said. Like, the Shaw benching, obviously very annoying, but I can't, as we'll talk about in a bit, I can't be too annoyed about that, because I was pretty set on doing it. And I had the feeling that Leeds would score against United based on the first game. And I mean, even Fabio Borja benched Shaw this week, which tells you all we need to know, really. But the big one for me was that City game. A big one in terms of observing these effects on myself. I thought it was just worth kind of watching the City game, just because obviously I enjoy watching football. But that was only what I can describe as a masochistic exercise, because I only owned Haaland, who had like 2% EO or something like that for me. And when Mahrez got the assist for Rodri and scored the pen, I couldn't help but flinch. And I had that initial sort of gut instinct, you know, oh, I could have done Mahrez. You know, I'm sure I considered it. And yeah, I was also surprised to find it. Remember Morris skied it? I was actually really happy that he missed it. Yeah, you know, there was that sort of unbridled reaction to missing out on a haul. And that was really kind of something that I noticed that kind of just kicked in despite kind of my rational brain being there, especially with Bruno kind of missing that one-on-one and blanking being really fresh in my memory. But I guess after time though, Sam, my rational thought process started to kick in. And I thought about, you know, what I said on the pod last week. I spoke to Lucy about it. Mahrez's 58-minute sub last week in European competitions made me think, oh, it's not going to be worth doing. And simple fact is, at no time did Mahrez coming in grace my agenda. I was never sat there with him coming in for Bruno on a confirmed screen, for example. So it was effectively like nonsensical that I was ruining a decision I never would have made anyway. I know it's a cliche now, but it's something you put down to bad luck, isn't it? I mean, obviously, the assist is the assist, but Mahrez scored a penalty with Haaland happening to be injured, so he didn't want to take or potentially having an injury. But yeah, I mean, it's really interesting how it kind of hit me. And then kind of later on, kind of this rational side of my brain took over and I was able to kind of see what I was thinking and begin to kind of poke away at those feelings. I'm aware that makes me sound like a data style android and how I've broken that down. But I think you mentioned this before. It's a product of kind of one thinking I was going to talk about the process this week, but also years of my brain being trained by playing FPL and having loads of setbacks to help me sort of react to it, I suppose. Mm. And I think that that's really interesting, especially when you look at the contrast between people who are a little bit newer, who, as you say, do get kind of all caught up in it and start thinking, oh, you know, that's terrible. I made an awful decision. Whereas if you've been playing for a while, you kind of think these things happen.
Yeah. And you have more confidence in your decision making after a few years. Like you back the fact that over time you make more correct calls than wrong. And I think with Mahrez as an example this week, in any given game week, any player, especially as explosive as Mahrez, can go off and can hit a big haul. But as experienced FPL players, as I'm sure most people listening to this pod are, they know that that's a possibility and they knew that before the game week started and still, based on the information available, thought it was a better idea not to go with him based on the risks that were attached to that player as well as the possible benefits. So I think the decision making was sound, and I think it says a lot that it didn't enter my mind, it didn't enter your mind. Obviously, there are a lot of managers out there that did think of doing it and went with him and have gotten the haul from him, but I can see arguments either way. I don't think it was necessarily a bad decision to not go for him, nor was it a bad decision to go for him if the opportunity presented itself to someone else.
Definitely. I think as well, you kind of touched on it there a little bit, is that this sort of thing floods FPL Twitter all the time, or FPL social media. If you're talking to your friends, you're in a group chat, you're on the Slack, you're on Discord. It just makes these things creep up on you a bit more and has a certain impact on you. You feel jealous of people who have done well if you've not done very well. You naturally look for others in the same boat so you can commiserate with each other. And I guess you have that kind of sense of schadenfreude for people who have done worse than you. Like sometimes you, even if you're doing badly, you want to think, oh, well, they're doing worse than me. So it's not as bad as it could be. And also on the flip side, if you've done well, some weeks you look for people who haven't done well just so you can feel good about yourself. That sounds like a terrible thing to say, but we all do it. I'm 100% sure we do. But I think kind of social media in general, as you inferred by the fact that some people did go for Mahrez and obviously are living at large, I think social media can open you up to what I'd call an impossible competition. Like it's really bloody difficult, isn't it, to take in what everyone else is doing and what they're thinking and still be able to have what could be termed like your own purity of thought unsullied by reading everyone else's ideas about what's happened, their experience, what to do next. So yeah, I've spoken about, you know, I've stepped back from Twitter a lot this year, which has been quite useful for keeping my own sort of thoughts. And, you know, I obviously didn't look at Twitter during the City game. But yeah, I think that's fascinating, just how much kind of Twitter perpetuates these sort of impacts on people. But as you say, over time, you become so aware of these things and you're able to recognize, I guess, when you're falling into the clutches of hindsight and regret, because you're able to say, oh, this happened before. And you react really early as well, don't you? Like to not react to things in the heat of the moment. I can't remember the last time I made a transfer within a game week, not on a Saturday or Sunday. I can't remember. Like the Austin rule was something we started out the pod with, which was like, you know, think the year before me and Nick started this, so 2016-17, I think we both brought in Charlie Austin when he was at Southampton. When you were in Europe,
oh no,
he got himself in. So we brought him in the Wednesday because he was rising. He got injured in Europe on the Thursday, you know, and suddenly we had to both take a hit to get rid of him. So like, we know that, you know, these things happen, and over time, I guess your experience, you know, tells you to just roll with it, doesn't it? Like, you know, obviously I still have an emotional reaction to it, as of evidence through me talking through how this week affected me. But I think, as you said earlier on, it's much less strong, isn't it? You're much more able to put things to one side, minimize it, and enjoy your weekends.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's okay to have an emotional reaction to it, because we love this game. We're passionate about football. So it makes sense that we would have an emotional attachment to a player not doing well. But I think the difference is not actually acting on those urges and on those emotions immediately, and giving yourself that minute to think through the process that you would normally go through over several seasons worth of experience playing the game. And as you say, if you were bitten before by making an early transfer out of rage, you'll know maybe after two or three times being hurt by doing that, you'll know maybe the third or fourth time you might want to just avoid doing it for a little bit, wait for the player to play in midweek, take the 0.1 price drop if you can. Obviously, if you're 0.0 in the bank, you need to make a move right there and then, fair enough. But if you can afford to take the 0.1 as a drop and make the move on a Friday evening or a Saturday morning when you've got all of the information available, then I think that always tends to be the better play. But that only comes through lessons learned and through experience of playing the game over several years.
Yep. Yeah, boring but true, sad. Yeah, I know. I knew I had a good replacement for Lucy. That's exactly what she said.
Something about a Southampton fan. We're just very realistic at these situations.
You've got your feet on the ground and able to just sum it up, say it how you see it. Excellent. So I think what's interesting there, though, is this idea of, you know, sometimes it's about movement generating regret in hindsight. You know, I shouldn't have done this move. I should have waited. But there's the other side of it as well. So Nick Maynard said that, you know, he was cursing himself this week for going Kevin De Bruyne over Mahrez, for example. He said that he was being too conservative by going there. Does that ever affect you as well, that you feel like, oh, I've not taken the risk? Which one, I guess, generates the most regret or hindsight? Conservatism or being risky, in your opinion?
Well, I don't know if I'll be the same as you here. It might be a bit of a weird take, but I always find that the decisions I make based out of fear are the ones I end up regretting the most. So I think with the World Cup wildcard in mind, I kind of was a bit fearful of what KDB, what Almiron, what Martinelli might do to me if I went against them. And I do now regret making those decisions, and I feel like I did it based out of fear rather than just genuinely wanting those players. And I get what Nick's saying here completely, because Mahrez is an exciting option and KDB felt more of a safety net, more of a warm blanket wrapped around you, knowing that he's got history and he usually starts every single week. But Mahrez is the exciting pick. And if you've got that primal urge to go for someone like a Mahrez because you just think it's exciting, then at the end of the day, FPL is a game and you should play it the way that you'll enjoy it most. If you're going to enjoy an explosive haul from Mahrez more than KDB ticking along week in, week out, then I can understand why he regrets that more than playing it the other way and being risky, but that not coming off. So yeah, I think, Nick, if you're listening, I'm probably in the same boat as you at the moment. I'm kicking myself a little bit for not being a bit more cavalier. But I suppose if you look at it in the opposite way as well, you don't want to say that and then go too cavalier in the future and then cut your nose off to spite your face. So there is a give and take.
Yeah, I think that you've hit nail on the head, really. It's fear. And those are the things that kind of stay with me. It's not so much whether I've taken the risk or not taken the risk. It's more about the fact that I've let external influences impact what I do, whether subconsciously or consciously. Stuff like, you know, not leaving player X and removing them and they've banged, or captioning herd pick player X over player Y, as I said a couple of weeks ago, when I thought everything went with the second player and I'm kind of ruining all those gains I could have made.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it comes down to that kind of anatomy of regret, doesn't it? Rejecting all of those positive outcomes I could have had and feeling bad I didn't realize them. It's just amazing how the negative sticks with you. Like, I've had a good season. And all I can really bring to mind when I think of the season are the negative events. Stuff like buying Trossard.
Yeah, yeah, that was the first one that came to my mind as well. Yeah. I made the same error as you there. Yeah, it's really weird how the human mind works in that way. You never really think about the good times. The same way that when you watch the news, it's always the negative events you listen to and you hear, because your mind is primed to sense the danger and sense the negative stuff, because you might need to react to it. So yeah, it's a very interesting complex that we humans have to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. You can reel off, you know, benching Ramsdale for his 11 pointer. Like, all these sorts of things come to mind, and sure, it's going to be something that will stick in my mind now for the rest of the season. Absolutely 100%. Crazy, isn't it? But I guess that this all kind of leads us into outcome bias as well, which is kind of, I guess, the sibling. I don't think it's quite a cousin. I think it's actually a sibling of the other two. Outcome bias is the idea of judging your decisions based on its eventual outcome, rather than the quality of decisions made. A good example of this would be if someone sold, let's say, Haaland for a hit this week and bought in Tony and captained him. So that would have won out due to points, right? And they'd be kind of acting like they should be carried through the streets of Twitter by kind of saying, look at me, aren't I such a debonair, daring individual? And so, you know, they might think the outcome legitimates the decision, but we might actually think, hang on a minute, you've lost value here. You've taken a hit, maybe, and you'll probably definitely want Haaland back. So you've spent a transfer on it at the very least, which means the decision wasn't integrally a good one, but the outcome favoured you.
And yeah,
I've used this refrain on the pods, but I'll use it again. In FPL, this whole idea simply boils down to not asking, was it the right decision, which is something that I think you kind of asked at kind of the entry level, but rather, am I happy with the decision I made, or am I happy with the decision process I went through to get to this decision? And reframing it like that helps, as it removes the emphasis from the outcome. The quality of decision-making becomes more important. It's easy to indulge in, isn't it, Sam? Especially in the cold light of day, FPL points are FPL points. It's very hard to not look at kind of things like Shaw on the bench this week and think, oh, I've made a bad decision there. Like, how do you overcome it? Or at least how do you sort of engage with it when that sort of thing happens?
Yeah, it's very hard, especially when you plan as much as I'm sure everyone listening to this pod does for any given game week. It's a series of different templates that you write down. You make draft transfers on FPL.team. You play around with your team constantly for a week. And you've probably got like 5 or 6 different avenues that your team might have gone down by the time you get to a deadline, meaning that when you look back at your outcome from the week, you're comparing the decision you actually made with probably at least 3 or 4 other potential avenues that you could have legitimately gone down, meaning you're pretty unlikely to have picked the most fruitful outcome in any given game week just because you've made so many different variations. What I personally do to get around this, because obviously I make a load of different avenues before I lock in my team, I try to write myself down when I lock in the logic behind the decision I'm making. So I've got this really nerdy Excel doc. Every week I go in and I write down what I put in. And if I don't have any time, if I'm out and about, I'll record myself a voice note just saying, right,
your girlfriend must be just thinking, who the hell am I with?
She's very, very lucky, I assure you. No. But yeah, so I'll listen to myself back, make sure that the decision making was sound rather than the outcome itself. And I found that has led me to a much more pleasant game week itself. Even if things are going against me, I know that at least the logic I used at the time I made the decision was probably okay, even if the result wasn't. And I think over time that it's more for my own mental health benefit than anything else. It just relaxes me a little bit by the end of the week, knowing that there was logic there. I wasn't just randomly clicking buttons and hoping it would pay off. And that's the way I probably deal with it at the moment.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And to be honest, after a while, after playing this for a long time, I know some of you listening may be kind of fairly new to FPL, but you know, after a while, if you take advice like what Sam said about how you could approach things, I used to write down at the end of the game, at the end of a game week, I used to write down my first thoughts, you know, my instincts, do all my research and listen to pods, read articles or whatever. And at the end of the game week, when I was, or the end, at the start of a new game week, when I was making my decision on transfers or moves or whatever, I'd always refer back to what I did last, what I thought I'd do, and kind of see how things have changed and kind of just sense check myself to make sure that I've done that right. But yes, what you said is good. And just making sure you're on kind of a good mental plane with your transfers, so you're able, or the captain decisions or whatever, so you're able to at least kind of have peace of mind about it, it's really important. And just a good fact for you here, Sam, we both bench Shaw this week, but Man United conceded an XG of 1.99 in the Leeds game. So
yeah,
it was on paper the right decision to bench Shaw. It would have been probably the wrong one to play him based on that alone. But football isn't played on spreadsheets, unfortunately. And if you actively did play him, like, well done, and you were rewarded with 12 points. But it maybe was one of those decisions you kind of say, hey, actually, we who didn't play him, we've got some basis for underlining why we did that. But I guess FPL decision making in general, we've both kind of begun to touch on that quite a bit. Is it difficult to avoid being on tilt? You know, when you're angry or you've had a bad game week or so on and so forth, how does regret, hindsight, outcome bias, how does it used to or how does it now affect your decision making? I'd assume that you've managed to be able to dampen it from what you said thus far.
Yeah, I think in the past it affected me much worse and I would try to double down quite a lot, especially during this period of the season where double game weeks seem to be flying all over the place and blank game weeks are interspersed as well. It feels like every decision you make is almost like at a high roller table at a casino. It feels like everything gets either rewarded highly or punished heavily. So it's very easy to go on tilt if something goes against you in any given game week, because you've got double the distance to catch up because of the variance. I think because, like you say, we've been playing it for a little while, I'm definitely not immune to it. I still go on tilt sometimes, and I probably will at some point this season go on tilt without even noticing it. But I think I'm getting better at just having a look at the way the land lies, making sure that I'm not just staring at a load of different team templates on Twitter before the deadline where everyone's made seemingly the same move to triple Liverpool in game week 25, for instance, which will be coming up very soon. And I assume we're going to see a lot of templates out there with three Liverpool players in it.
Yeah.
But I can assure you that won't be the average effective ownership team template out there in the world. So it's trying to dampen down what you see on social media and try to remember that everyone is in basically the same situation as you. Even if you see some perfect teams out there that you want to get to quickly, it doesn't mean that everyone's got that perfect team and you're chasing everyone. You're just chasing maybe that top 1 or 2% of people that happen to have a great team on paper that week. But actually, if you've got triple Liverpool in game week 25, you're probably not looking too great for game week 26 when they've got Man United at home. So there's a balancing act there, and you just want to take a step back and have a bit more of a wider perspective on the lay of the land over several game weeks rather than just one at a time when considering going on tilt.
Definitely. A good friend of mine and friend of the pod, FPL General, has remarked several times that FPL can be like a battle with yourself. I think that's entirely true, especially when you bear in mind like the wider ephemera when it comes to FPL in terms of, you know, social media, effective ownership, the transfer market, all this sort of thing, like the content churn. And I know you're kind of, I'm preaching to the converted, and you are too, Sam, to some extent, but it's always a good idea to take that breath and let things dissipate before you act. It's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes, especially if you've had a few bad weeks, so after the World Cup wildcard, I had three bad weeks, and we got to that point where people were like saying, hold. And in that case, I kind of saw an opportunity to get the Matoma against a kind of quite docile herd, as I'd label it, because they were everyone else keeping Almiron and rolling. So
yeah,
that was kind of, sometimes you can take these opportunities, but it's always best to make sure that those are also reasoned, as well as being kind of something that you're doing to try to address the slide. And it's always a case-by-case basis, which I guess is no good to anyone. But luckily, we're trying to teach managers to fish here rather than give them a fish outright. Another thing to kind of consider here, Sam, is that, you know, these impulses exist for a reason. And you know, there's another side of it, which is the fact that they could actually be good things. So we framed all these things in negative ways so far, you know, things to be treated suspiciously, things to be overcome. But there's another side of it too. You know, the evolutionary reason why they're there. I'm not going to go into loads of detail, but regret, hindsight, outcome, the base emotion behind all that is a reaction to something not turning out like you wanted. And I guess that's intended to be a bit of a lesson to you in the evolutionary terms. You know, this felt bad, so I'll try to avoid it in future. I mean, you've said already, Sam, that over time you've mastered the emotions, but are there any points where, you know, you've been feeling that, or you've kind of seen something and you kind of thought, oh, actually, I should have made that decision. And, you know, perhaps it is good that I'm regressing this because it's kind of prompting me to think again about, I don't know, keeping this player for too long or removing this player for too long. Sometimes to muddy the water a bit, it can actually be quite good to kind of realize that, oh, I'm actually feeling this for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in FPL, as with anything in life, really, it's good to have humility. So to look back and not just assume you made the correct decision. So as I mentioned, my voice notes and my Excel sheet, there is quite often times where I'll look back and think, actually, that wasn't just a bad variance, that was bad decision making at the time based on the information I had available. And I think that's what you're hinting at there is, yes, you've been taught some sort of lesson, you've been punished by potentially bad variance, but equally, it could be because you've made a poor decision. And it's important to sit down and assess those decisions that you made prior to the deadline based on the information that you would have had available, not just on hindsight bias on outcome bias itself, but also to look at the decision-making process that you made at the time. And you're right, it's there for a reason. We've got that instinct for a reason. And if you're not constantly trying to learn about yourself and about the decisions you make and improve that decision-making process, you're not really going to go anywhere. So it is important from an evolutionary standpoint, and I think it can help us in FPL to have that bit of humility, look back and assess whether or not it was just bad luck and you had a bad hand, or whether there was something flawed in the decision-making process at the time.
Definitely. I guess really what this comes down to is the fact that you, over time, as you experience things, or as you kind of hear managers who've been playing for a long time with varying degrees of success, in my case, from listening to content creators across the spectrum, it is about learning from these emotions a bit. And I've acted in the past in ways which have caused these emotions, aided and abetted by social media, to my detriment. And it's kind of about recognizing them, how you're feeling, what worked and what didn't work in the past, and finding a way to, I guess, brave it through them and ensure the next decision you make is one you can be happy with. Experience, I guess, tells over time, if not in outcomes and in peace of mind, as we've discussed with decision making. And really, that's what we could ever ask for, given the small role FPL should play in our lives. That's for sure. Right, let's take a break there. That was a good discussion, Sam. And we'll come on to any other business, really, in a meandering sort of chat just after this.
Who got the assist?
Right, we're back, and Robertson looks to have just kept a clean sheet, but he's decided to get a yellow card in the process, Sam. So I'm looking forward to the last minute concede, which I'm sure is about to happen on the counter for Everton. But hey, there we go. Let's move on to any other business. I think the first thing to ask, because I think it's something that's come up a few times, is how are you feeling about double game weeks with yet another set to come? Like, you know, last week was Lucy's first experience of the pod being instantly dated. He did the pod on the Monday, you know, thought, oh, you know, we shook each other's hand virtually. Always kept a clean sheet. Brilliant. shook each other's hands virtually and said, oh, that was a good pod. Yeah, good pod. And then, you know, by the next day, dated.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how are you feeling about double game weeks now after there being so many, few to come? Obviously, you can't really change the fact the Queen died. But hey, you know, what are they like for you now? How do you regard them?
Yeah, well, at the risk of I myself also saying stuff that instantly becomes dated any day now, with so many announcements just flying everywhere without any warning, I think I'm pretty safe. I don't think there's going to be any double game weeks announced other than what will come in game week 29, which we won't know about for probably a couple more game weeks yet. I think the upcoming doubles, especially with 27 in mind, especially with Brentford and Brighton being the two teams that you probably want to be targeting for that game week, it makes planning really interesting for the next few weeks. I don't think anyone's going to be jumping on either Brighton or Brentford assets right now because they both blank in game week 25. But then you've also only got two free transfers to get you from presumably one or two at most Brentford or Brighton players to as many as you can possibly get to in game week 27, because they both have very good double game weeks. Then if you take a slightly longer view, they blank in game week 28, almost certainly. I think they're both at over 70% chance of a blank. And then in game week 29, they're both very, very high chance of having a double again. So those two teams seem to be almost the key to unlocking the route ahead in our strategies, which I would not have expected at the start of the season. And I think with all of that in mind, it makes game week 25 quite problematic, because you don't really want to go too overcommitted on Liverpool players, for instance, because if you are, then you're leaving yourself quite exposed and you're probably getting rid of players for the future game weeks as well.
Makes me look like a genius having two Bryson and Robertson in situ, right?
Yeah, you obviously knew what was coming.
Absolutely, a happy accident. I'm sure there was something about, you know, Bryson having a double early, which only put Estupiñán in. But, you know, but happy with where it is. And as you said, game week 25. I suspect I'm going to have 10. But I mean, that's fine. I'm not going to be really losing any sleep over that. I think the double game weeks in general, like I said last week, the sheen has definitely worn off them a bit, hasn't it? I mean, it's a case of again.
Yeah,
it's too much of a good thing. You know, I love stout, but do I have more than one a night? Absolutely not, because I'm not going to appreciate the second one not having the first one, you know. And I feel like double game weeks have passed beyond what it used to be, you know, a special event that we're all really happy about, something quite, you know, commonplace, the small ones at least. So they used to be kind of like, oh, you know, this is a lesser seen min double game week, oh, this is exciting. And now it's kind of like, oh, you know, it's another one I've got a plan for, another one I've got to look at. And then we spoke about this last couple of weeks with the butterfly effect, where I kind of think, all right, I make a move this week, but how is it going to affect me, as you were kind of touching on, in 4 or 5 weeks' time? And obviously, it's no one's fault that this has happened. I'm a bit of a grumpy old git here. But I think we need to stop double game week, Sam, before it gets out of control. I think it's getting a bit silly. That's what I've got to say.
It's having too much chocolate before you go to bed. That's the problem. It's just too much of a good thing at the moment. And I love a double game week as much as the next FPL manager. But at the moment, and in the last few seasons, to be honest, they have felt a little bit relentless. And it has meant that if you get on a certain pathway, you're kind of locked in on that route. Like, I think it's happened last season, it's happening now as well, where depending on your team structure right here and now, you're probably locked into getting probably a certain player in game week 25, and then also certain specific players in game week 27 as well, unless you do something drastic like a free hit or a wild card, which obviously has its own consequences and its own route that you'll end up going down as well. So it does feel like a pathway is kind of laid out for you, depending on where you are ahead of the game week, the double game weeks. And I did enjoy it more when it was quite rare. Not so many people knew about them. And you might sneakily a triple captain, a double game week player that was lesser fancied because there weren't too many of them about. The Dunk Duffy effect from several years ago, obviously, not a great outcome, but it was quite fun at the time. And I do miss those days a little bit.
Yeah, it's gone too mainstream now. It's not fun for us hipster types, that's for sure.
Yeah.
before we move on to the questions we've got from listeners, it would be remiss of me to ask, especially because you are effectively replacing Lucy as a resident saint, how are you feeling about Southampton? Like, you know, Jones obviously had to go, and Ben Fisher in The Guardian made a good point about the fact that your team's actually pretty decent. Obviously, you thought were decent. There should be more than enough in the tank to compete. What do you make your chances of staying up? I mean, it sounds like there's obviously, you know, we're not going to date the pod by kind of saying there's links to X, Y, and Z, but there's quite a few people who are in the mix. I mean, what do you make of the way forward? He had to go first off, didn't he, though?
Yeah. Jones, unfortunately, did have to go. It got toxic very quickly. The fans don't, and I don't have much patience at the moment because the situation is dire. We needed a change in form. We needed an uptick in the attitude that we were showing on the pitch, and we never really got that under Jones. It just felt like the wrong appointment from day one, really. There were moments. Obviously, beating City in the cup was a nice boost, and we actually played very well during that match, but it felt like more of a one-off as time went on. And yeah, I am quite resigned to the prospect of facing the drop at the moment. It looks pretty bleak. I'm not completely writing us off. It would be foolish to do so. We're only a few points off of being in a competitive position again. So a couple of wins, yeah. Teams have fought back from worse positions, and if the Saints go marshing in, sorry about that, then I think it would be the correct appointment given the situation. And I don't think we would have many better options available to us at such short notice. And obviously he's got experience of surviving the drop and plays quite a high intensity brand of football. And he's passionate as well, which I do like, and it'll rile the players up. So not completely ruling us out, but I'm looking forward to some wins in the championship, put it that way.
Well, hopefully it won't come to that. I think Lucy would quit and never come back. But yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on his LinkedIn for the updates that come if that does happen.
Yeah, yeah. Do you also follow him on LinkedIn then?
I've seen a couple of very, very kind of cringeworthy Brentian sort of posts and kind of little things on there. But
well, we love our David Brent style managers, so he all fit right in.
exactly. And if Hasenhüttl goes to Leeds, to kind of a switcheroo is complete. But like, you know, was it a Kerbishley going to West Ham and then Pardew going to Charlton?
Yeah.
That time it would be very, very like that. It'd be quite funny if that happens, that's for sure. Right. A few questions this week, not very many because I didn't put up for very long, basically, because I had loads of work to do. First thing, Gaurav asks if Arsenal should be shaken off after a couple of dodgy results. If we lose to City, can we see an exodus of Arsenal players? I mean, this is a hyperbole because I know that Gaurav is a gunner. But it's certainly been a couple of that lackluster performances, hasn't it, Sam, about the zip and zap of what's come before. I mean, what do you think about this? Will people lose confidence in the Gunners?
Yeah, I think it's very early yet to suggest that people might start shipping them. Obviously, double game week 25 is on the horizon. They will be heavily favoured for that game week, especially with the fixtures that they've got for that. So I doubt that anyone's going to be brave enough, let's call it brave enough, to move off of them before game week 25 is over. If for any reason they're still not firing by the time we finish game week 25, I think at that point we might see a few people moving away from the triple up and trying to find value elsewhere. But at the end of the day, I think that's fairly unlikely anyway. I think that they'll start finding their feet again, probably against City on Wednesday. I think they'll be right up for that game. And even if they don't perform well in that one, they've still got three games left before anyone is realistically considering selling their Arsenal assets. I think it's more about which Arsenal assets at this point. And I think it's perfectly viable to look away from the likes of Martinelli at the moment, considering the minutes risk. But the likes of Ødegaard, Saka, and probably Nketiah for the time being, as well as Arsenal defence as well, you probably don't want to be manoeuvring them out for anything other than other Arsenal players right now, considering the fixtures ahead.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, on the pitch, our wingers I've definitely been identified by opposition managers as a threat and ones to kind of shut down. And Odegaard in this playmaking role as well has, as we saw with Dyche, especially against Everton, seen quite a tough time of it. As Thomas Frank said this week when he was asked if Arsenal naming the same lineup every week is helpful, he said it's certainly useful in a way. He did say that we could be hard to stop because we do what we do so well. But when plan A fails, it can be quite tough for us to sort of reinvent, especially when it comes to game management. We do have another weapon on the bench in Trossard, which is good. We're lacking that.
Do you think he's due a start against City based on his performances recently? Do you think Martinelli moves to the bench for a week?
I don't think against City. Especially given how they're setting up without a left back at the moment. I think that there's definitely room on the flanks. And I think that there's going to be, I know obviously it's Saka on the right, but I think there's definitely going to be space to be had for Martinelli to get in behind. I think that's going to be really important for us. I genuinely don't know how that game's going to go. Like, I couldn't call it last week, and a mediocre performance versus Brentford for us, a regulation City win against Aston Villa, neither of them are sort of catalysts. They're going to move the needle on my perception.
No.
But, you know, I think overall, what follows the City game is good enough to keep your Arsenal players, because the run we've got to come up to game week 32 encompasses only Liverpool of the quote-unquote top 17. So that's a good 8 weeks or 2 months of games where you're probably going to be playing our guys and be happy to be doing so. And let's not forget as well how ridiculous the value of our players is. Like, Odegaard's now 7, starting 6.5. Saka started at 8, I think it's 8.2, 8.3 now. And Martinelli started at 6, Jesus at 8. Remember, he had like a massive ownership in the other start of the season. Like, all of our attacking players are ludicrously cheap relative to our league position. Like, if we lose to City, then at least we haven't got the distorting fog of European competition again, still for a little while. So we can concentrate solely on bouncing back. And gotta make hay while the sun shines, right? And our players are just such ridiculous value right now, something we'll touch on probably next week. And that it just definitely, you've got to make most of it, really. I hear what you're saying about the triple up, though. And I think, in my mind, yes, maybe you'd be thinking, especially when Jesus starts to come back to near fitness, I mean, he starts to become more interesting, and Kessie obviously starts to become less interesting. He'll kind of be on notice, one bad game and suddenly you'll see Jesus start and probably keep the spot. Martinelli, I think, will become interesting again once Jesus is back because of the positional swapping that he is compared to do. The only thing I would say is probably the defence. If you've got a White or something like that, that's been very inconsistent. So I've had Ramsdale since the World Cup, and he's been unbelievably annoying. I mean, admittedly, I did bench one clean sheet against Spurs, but he's seemingly a crapper version of Edison, allergic to saves while conceding kind of soft goals. And it's kind of 2 points or 3 points. So I know he does occasionally get a one save point or a clean sheet, and that kind of is it. It's not particularly anything more than that. Looking at defensive numbers, 2 errors leading to goal, which is kind of second, I think, amongst teams since the World Cup restart. And even though we're 4th for XGC, we're some way behind Newcastle in 3rd, and we're actually inferior to all-conquering Brentford. We just had a Nottingham Forest than that. So it's not a disintegration of discipline, but we're comfortably ahead of most individuals apart from City before the World Cup. I think our XGC was just off City's and miles ahead of Newcastle in 3rd. So lapses in defence have really cost us. And I suspect, if you've got a White, then maybe he becomes a player to rotate according to the fixture soon. So if you've got somebody else to play, you want to swap to from a 4-4-2 to playing Andreas, we were thinking, I'm going to just go 3-4-3 and have White and my 11th man being the other defender. Perfectly viable. So I think the defence is definitely not one that I'd be trusting right now. But there aren't that many trustworthy defences out there. So maybe you'll be all right. Maybe you look at the data and think, they could probably express that. But the fixtures are just really good until April, late April. So it's definitely not something to be worrying about too much now, Guara, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Next question. Amund asks, should we just avoid Man City defenders altogether? And if not, why not? What do you think here, Sam?
Yeah, personally, I'm avoiding them at the moment, and I might be proven wrong pretty quickly because Man City are an elite defence and inevitably they will start keeping clean sheets at some point. But I think, generally speaking, none of the options right now fill me with that much confidence for Man City at the moment. Akanji and Ake seem like the two most sensible picks going into this game week, both of which didn't start the first game against Villa, where you're hoping for the clean sheet points and then obviously some appearance points against Arsenal. And it just feels like Pep is experimenting quite a lot with that back line at the moment, not just with the personnel, but also with the shape. So I don't really know anyone other than maybe Luke who would be able to predict what's going to come next. And I think anyone would struggle. So personally, right now, especially considering both that risk in terms of minutes and the fact that they're a bit like Arsenal in the sense that they're conceding a few, like, one error a game.
Soft goals.
A lot of soft, one big chance a game goals where Ramsdale might be letting it in quite softly. Edison or Ramsdale might be letting them in quite softly even. It seems like a team that I can just leave to one side for now, wait for a lineup to consistently present itself, and then I can have a look at them later on.
Yeah, definitely. Second best defence since the restart. Similar sort of profile to Arsenal's, really. The issue is, as you mentioned, who the hell starts other than Edison? Mm. We just don't know. I was listening to Johnny Pringle and Adam Pritchard on Planet FPL's Clash Correspondence last week, and it seemed like the City fans were clamouring for the return of Laporte and Diaz. And that did happen this week over Akanji and Ake. I think Diaz was withdrawn at half-time, maybe with an injury.
I think it was because of the yellow.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine. But, it's one of those, isn't it?
Yeah, just can't trust Pep to play the same back three each week. And it's impossible to play that game, so I'm just avoiding it altogether right now.
Absolutely. It really is a case of don't buy, don't sell. Forest and Bournemouth away are the next two. Absolutely fine on paper. The Champions League back. Absolutely no way of determining who will play. Maybe you'd be thinking, someone like Akanji might actually be quite good for that if he's not trusted in Champions League, for example. But I just don't really like Pep whispering very much. I've never really enjoyed that. So I think it's quite good to be able to kind of just think, you know what, I'm not going to bother with the Pep sweats, as I said last week. Just avoid it. But if you do own these players, you've got to kind of play them. As Lucy and I have mentioned in the past, you're kind of locked in now. And I doubt you want to waste a transfer ahead of 25 to remove one of these players. So it's a case of just kind of rolling with the punches as it is. Speaking of rolling with the punches, Jason's question is next. So he said he benched March's 10-pointer this week. And he'd been looking for a bench miracle until Ake came on the last minute. So like Lucy, he asked, how do we best play it out now with a strong squad? Because it seems like a bit of an unusual situation for a lot of managers to have that and have that sort of man off the bench. I mean, scoring well. I mean, for me, I think it's an element of kind of grinning and bearing it at the most moment, as we saw with Shaw, Jason. There's always a risk of this happening, I guess, and using kind of the techniques or at least the kind of the mental process we spoke about earlier to inform your response is probably paramount, isn't it, Sam?
Yeah, completely agreed. It is annoying when it happens, but try to look at it positively. It will come in handy having a stronger squad overall in the weeks to come, especially with blank game weeks on the horizon. It's nice having options there and a playing 15, because at the end of the day, you're probably going to need those options like a Pereira, like a Kilman, possibly, and maybe a Tarkowski over the next few weeks, because they will come in game week 25, possibly game week 28 as well. And maybe if you look really far in advance, maybe game week 32 as well. So annoying in the short term. And trust me, I agree, as someone who's got Shaw and Andreas on the bench this week, it is annoying, but I think overall you will be better off for it.
Definitely. I'm just not the sort of person who likes to have the situation I'm in at the moment where I've got 11, 12 good men I don't like that. I like to have a designated bench. But the thing is because Estupiñán, who was my designated 12th man, has been doing so well, it's difficult to not bench him. And because Robertson's been doing so badly, you know, it's difficult to play him, I suppose, is how it's kind of worked out. But obviously you've got kind of legacy of Robertson being, you know, so good in the past, being an expensive premium defender versus a 4.5 as I bought him player like Estupiñán. So sometimes these things can happen, but yeah, I think you're right. Like it's always about kind of just being quite sanguine about the situation in front of you. But there's always kind of an adage, isn't it? Well, at least it shows me my squad is strong. It shows me I've got the right players. Although it's not really much comfort this week when you've got Shaw's 12 points staring up at you from the bench.
No, it's not. But you are right. It is a comfort over the long run, and it will help you in the weeks to come.
Speaking of a comfort, sometimes there's a player that you just dislike completely and you want to just get rid of. Alan says he's looking to waste a transfer on Cucurella to James this week simply because he despises Cucurella being in his team. I mean, have you ever made a transfer like that, Sam? And what would your advice be to Alan? Because I can kind of understand that impulse. Just be like, yeah, I want to just get rid of this guy. Just have him out of my life.
I think I've done that with Wilfried Zaha about 5 different times in my history of FPL. So I can completely agree. There are certain players that just seem to troll you whenever you've got them. And to be honest, Reece James actually might be another candidate that has done that in recent seasons for a lot of people. So yeah, I can completely relate. It does sometimes feel like a sideways transfer, especially in a instance like this where you're going wing back from Chelsea to wing back from Chelsea. But I think you take each on a case by case basis. There is nothing wrong with the move that Alan is suggesting here. Reece James is the superior asset in FPL as long as he stays fit. And of course, Cucurella is now probably going to be a minutes risk with Chilwell back and on the horizon for a start pretty soon. And also, I would say, a superior player. So, yeah, I get the frustration. Cucurella has not been a fun own in general this season. And yeah, I would not hold it against Alan whatsoever for getting rid of him at the first possible opportunity. What I would say is that just make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons, not just because you hate the sight of him in your team. Look around, see if there's any other fires that need putting out more, and then make the decision based on that. But I think in this situation, it's the right move to make.
Absolutely. Sometimes, obviously, I think the emphasis we've got on transfers and captains in a second is going to be to roll this week. I think everyone's going to probably do it, or at least a vast majority of people will do it. Taking a hit or, you know, using a transfer this week could be to your detriment if you haven't got, you know, that second transfer banked already or whatever.
Yeah.
Equally, as Sam says, sometimes it can be super satisfying just to get this sort of thing done. Like, loads of times I've sold a player and I've kind of wished I could buy him back again just to sell him again. I think Wilfried Zaha is very high on my list of players like that. Eden Hazard is another player who comes to mind for a player that I've you know, sold and been very happy to sell. He's pissed me off. And then the next week, obviously goes on and gets a brace or something like that. He was always that kind of guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I guess it's down to timing for these sorts of things. If we're going to be kind of more level about it, I guess if you're replacing Cucurella or a player like that with a player who has 25, is superior, as Sam says, and Reece James, and has good fixtures coming, then fair enough. Does the information you receive or the 2 free transfers you'll get by not doing that move constitute an opportunity cost for your satisfaction? That's for an individual to decide. And the only other thing is that butterfly effect stuff. So, I mean, there's always that. So you lose 2 free transfers. But sometimes as well, getting that awkward transfer done can be very helpful later on in unintended ways. So you know, you're sort of back out ahead of your transfer plan if you make that sort of awkward move at an awkward time. Sometimes they're not the best things to do, but they can actually be quite useful because it paradoxically helps you because you've kind of gotten rid of a problem or a little niggle or just something uncomfortable in your team. And you're able to sort of move on without that plaguing you. You know, it's not exactly a raging fire, but it's like kind of a little sort of bit of kindling which could go off at any moment. Sometimes it's quite nice just to do a bit of health and safety. All right, okay, I don't need to do this, but it helps me to do it because then it's gone. I don't really want this guy in my team long term. I've got no interest in holding him. And sometimes it is good. And obviously, you know, emotionally, it can just be very nice and very kind of cleansing to remove somebody you just don't really want in your team, don't really rate, as you've kind of mentioned with Zaha being in your team every now and again. Cool. My final question this week segues us nicely into transfers and captains. It's Nathan Jacobson who asks if captaincy could actually finally be under consideration this week. So Haaland has obviously been seen in training. So Nathan asked me that before. He was seen in training, but we may see rotation jitters prior to the Champions League. Could we look elsewhere? But let's move into transfers and captains anyway, Sam, for this. Like, I guess you're rolling, but I mean, before you kind of talk me through your team, is there any sort of way that you wouldn't captain Haaland this week? I mean, if the Forest game comes, obviously we need to see what happens on Wednesday, but the Forest game comes with before the Leipzig game midweek, and then you've got the Bournemouth game. It could be one of those where you might benefit by captaining a Rashford or something, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting one this week. As Nathan correctly says, there's that little doubt now creeping in because Rashford's in such good form. It's viable that you could look elsewhere. And I think we'll know a lot more before the deadline, luckily, because we'll see Haaland midweek. I'm certain he'll start against Arsenal, but who knows? Maybe he won't look quite at his best. Maybe he'll still be a little bit slow out of the traps with a little bit of a knock. And of course, we've also got Rashford playing in the Europa League, I think, on Thursday night too. I think that's this week anyway. So we'll have an eye on both of these players before the deadline comes. And I think if there's enough doubt over whether Haaland starts against Forest away, which could happen if he's being rested ahead of the Champions League, they will be prioritising that again, as they always try to. It could work against him starting against Nottingham Forest. What I would say is that given Man City's league position and the fact that, well, and depending on the game state after the Arsenal game, they might well be fully gunning for top spot in the Premier League at that point. And I think Pep, as long as Haaland's even half fit, wouldn't be foolish enough not to start his star striker away at Forest, which has turned into a bit of a fortress. So I think the risk of Haaland not starting against Forest, as long as he's fit, is pretty low. But I can see a debate over those minutes. Maybe he gets taken off early if they're doing well, like we saw against Villa. And Rashford, I don't quite see that happening at the moment. I just think he's playing well enough that he's just going to be thrown in any given week for 90 minutes and he's likely to score, especially against Leicester.
Yeah, I think Haaland-wise, you're right. Like, I think it wouldn't have escaped City data analysts that Forest are doing pretty well, as I mentioned earlier, on with XGC being decent. That maybe it might be worth playing Haaland for that. I mean, if they weren't doing well and if they were a soft touch, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked one iota to see maybe an Alvarez playing. And yeah, I don't think that City wouldn't be all right without Haaland playing that game. I'm sure they'd be absolutely fine and probably still win. But I still kind of think that depending on the game state, as you said, by Wednesday, I'd be surprised to see him not start. But I mean, we'll have to see. Pep's going to give us nothing in the press conferences. The predictor is going to predict. The player is going to play. We just don't know. We've got no idea. But I think we need more information, perhaps, with the what happens on Wednesday, what happens elsewhere. But I mean, I wouldn't be too upset about putting on Rashford because, as Sam said, he's going to be thrown into every game no matter what. So if that happens, then it happens. And plus, you know, you had that bizarre situation with him having over 100% EO anyway. So I'm sure he probably will have that again.
Yeah.
And if there are those jitters when it comes to Champions League, given the fact that, you know, City or at least Haaland aren't quite doing what they were doing recently, although, you know, funnily enough, it wasn't very long ago. It was only kind of a couple of weeks ago that Haaland scored a hat trick. We've already kind of gone, oh, you know, they're falling off. They're not great. It really was not long ago Haaland scored a hat trick. The 22nd of January, he scored a hat trick. Like, you know, it's amazing. And you know, Pep's definitely not been shy about taking him off after 60 minutes or so. If games run, just deal with it. And as we saw at Villa this weekend, maybe he had a thigh injury, maybe he didn't, maybe he had felt something, but you know, it wasn't kind of constituted enough to constitute an injury. But the game was won. It was 30 minutes, 3-0 down after 45 minutes. There's no way Villa were coming back from that. Pep knew it. We knew it. Take him off. Fair play. And hopefully, you know, if he does come off early, he's just going to be like he was in the Wolves game. He got, again, taken off 60 minutes in that game. I think it was 60-02 or something. As long as he, you know, if there's three goals scored, you've got a good chance that Haaland's going to be involved in at least two of them, three of them. That's enough for your captain, isn't it? But you know, Leicester, it's not as if Leicester are defensive, you know, heroes thus far. Even Spurs scored against them, for God's sake. So, you know, it's just one of those, isn't it? Where you've got to just watch it and see. But yes, it would be interesting if the captaincy did come under review for the first time in quite a while.
It'd be a lot of fun if that happened. And one thing's for certain this week is one of Rashford or Haaland is going to hurt you in terms of your rank this week, because they're both going to be over 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, rolling, Sam?
Yeah, rolling. Barring any sort of catastrophic injury crisis at any of the big teams, I think it's looking like a roll. Pretty much set up fairly template ahead of game week 25 as well. I need to find a way to get to probably Salah or Darwin by game week 25, but I don't think I'm going to commit to more Liverpool than just one. So I think having two free transfers for that game week will be pretty important if you can at all do that. And that's what I'm aiming to do.
Yeah, it makes sense. So yeah, I'm rolling this week. And I think that, you know, if you are sat there with two free transfers, maybe someone like, you know, buying Tarkovsky or something, just reshuffling your bench could be worth doing. So I think it's unlikely anyone's playing five at the back. So, and Tarkovsky's 4.2. I'm pretty sure his EO is going to be pretty high on the double game week amongst engaged managers anyway. So he'd be a player that you probably just buy and just kind of just leave him ready for 25 if you've got an extra transfer. But I think, you know, for most people, it'll probably be a role. Any hit, I think, is going to be quite difficult to recover from this week, barring high variance outcomes. I don't see, I mean, maybe it's just kind of, you know, famous last words, but I don't see too much in the roster which screams, you know, must buy into of all the teams out there, especially given the fact that Sam's mentioned Brighton and Brentford. We both Brighton against Fulham, so not the best home game. Brentford at home to Crystal Palace is a decent home game, but then blank 25. So wouldn't be rushing to the likes of Ivan Toney or something like that. I think that I saw something quite funny today. Was it FPL Price or something mentioned that loads of bought in players are all blanking 25.
So, yeah. I think five of the top 10 as it stands, transfers in, are players that currently blank in game week 25. So it does go to show there will be a turn in fortunes if you're an engaged manager. I think, and I truly believe, the next few weeks will be pivotal. If you're engaged and you're planning ahead and you can map it out weeks in advance, I think it will pay dividends soon. But yeah, I mean, there is an argument to say they're playing well, even if they blank into game week 25, make hay while the sun shines and get those lovely Toney and Matoma points right here, right now. But personally, I'm not on them yet. And if I went for them right now, it would just leave me in a horrible situation for game week 25. So I'm going to hold off for the time being.
Yeah, fair play. So we're both forward in the free hit then. I'll probably be doing like Shaw and Bruno to Tarko and Salah.
Yeah.
Maybe take a hit to remove one of Patterson or, you know, Greenwood, something like that. I mean, one of those that we'll come to next week. Right. Okay. I think that's your lot. We'll be back next week for a normal run-of-the-mill pod that isn't mid-game week. Hey, we'll see what happens with the last game. So if you, that would be nice before another mid-game week pod after that during game week 25. Anyway, thanks so much for coming on, Sam. Really, really useful.
Thank you very much for having me. I always enjoy getting on this pod. And hope Lucy feels better soon. Hope Saints go marching on in the future.
Well, let's see. Thanks for listening, everybody. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find me on Twitter, Tom at WGTA_FPL, at Lucy Hynett with two T's. Next, we will be joined by Gian Bartra for his maiden pod appearance. He's a creator of very good threads, insightful viewpoints on Twitter at FPL_GianBartra, if you want to follow him. I will be at FPL Meets this weekend at the Thirsty Bear near Waterloo. If you want to check that out, it's at FPL Meets on Twitter. We'll all be there from midday the Arsenal games at 12:30, and we'll be there basically all day, all night, probably. 20% off food and drink for all attendees if you can make it as well, thanks to the deal cut by Don Nima. Do stop in if you can. I'd heartily encourage you to do so. And you know, if you're not sure, well, it's always great fun. New friends could be made really easily because we've all got this sort of common language, which is FPL. All you need to do is kind of just say, oh, how's your season going? Whatever. And if you're really not sure, but you do come along, come and find me at least. I'll buy you a drink and we'll get you chatting. That doesn't count for anybody who knows me already, I should say. Yeah. Sadly, Sam can't make this one. But yeah, hopefully next time.
Definitely next time. I'm usually there. Unfortunately, I've got a prior commitment this week, which I definitely can't get out of. but yeah, I'm usually there and I can completely corroborate what you're saying. They are a lot of fun. If you're even slightly nervous about going, trust me, it's worth it. After 2 minutes, you couldn't feel more at home. So yeah, get down there if you can.
Excellent. Excellent. Cool. All right. So yeah, that's it. Let's speak next week. Enjoy the rest of the week. They're not too much. Those are Triple City. And I hope we assisted you and speak to you again next Monday. Take care. See ya.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.